Hi, this is Justine Toe and you're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Well, you may have seen news reports of the latest Jesus discovery, an archaeological discovery of a fragment of papyrus that contains the words, "Jesus said to them, 'My wife,'" and then the rest is obscured. But then later on it says something like, she will be able to be my disciple. Now, this discovery has been widely reported in the news both here and abroad, with some media reports suggesting that it's going to cause a lot of friction and perhaps cause the church to reconsider the basis of its faith in some way. So we're really lucky to have historian, author, minister, and also co-founder of the Centre for Public Christianity here with us to speak about this. We welcome John Dixon into the studio, who will help us sort the fact from the fiction. Thanks for joining us, John.
Lovely to be with you to talk about my favourite subject, which is Jesus, not his wife.
Great. Now, John, every couple of years there seems to be like some sort of biblical discovery that is supposed to rock the foundations of Christianity. I suppose we were due for another one.
We were, in fact. It's overdue. It's been at least 5 years since the Lost Tomb of Jesus documentary, which claimed that they'd found a burial box in a tomb, and the burial box said Jesus on the outside, and so they thought maybe this was Jesus, and there were actual remains in the burial box, so that would be rather disappointing for Christians. But of course, you know, the dust settles and there's no reputable historian who thinks that really is Jesus' burial box. So it's been 5 years, so it's about time, at least.
Now, what do we know about this particular find of this papyrus or this scrap of a text?
Well, the thing is, it's a tiny little piece of paper and it has about 50 legible words on it, written in the Egyptian script called Coptic. Which is well known. Christianity was quite successful down in Egypt in the early centuries, and Coptic was the way they wrote their texts, many of them. Unfortunately, we don't know where it was discovered. The owner of the fragment wishes to remain anonymous, so we don't know the provenance, we don't know the owner, and it hasn't even been tested yet, carbon-14 tested, and or authenticated, really. So I'm hoping it's authentic. That is, it's an authentic 4th century fragment. But we still don't even know that. It'll be months off even knowing that.
And when there's all those questions over where it's come from and who has brought it to light and all that sort of thing, does that make people in the academy just go, I don't know about this? Is it just like a media like beat up, really?
Definitely. I mean, an academic paper has been written on this, which we've all read. But even there, the provenance is not made clear. It simply says the owner wishes to remain anonymous and handed this in to Harvard University professor Karen King, who is well known for writing about variant Christianities from the early centuries, particularly the Gnostic Gospels. And this text fits into that framework. The initial testing that's been done on the script style suggests that it's late 4th century. So we're talking 350 years after Jesus. But it's possible what this is a copy of an earlier document written in Greek or maybe Coptic. And the earliest date we could plausibly claim for a document like this would be late 2nd century. So we're talking 180. That's 150 years after Jesus. So even Karen King herself reckons that's as early as you could push it, late 2nd century.
And how does this late 2nd century possibility for this fragment, how does that compare with the material that is normally taken as authoritative for the life of Jesus?
Well, normally anything outside of the 2nd century has to be taken with a grain of salt because it's certainly possible for good information to be maintained over a century and maybe a little bit more in other cases. But this is a century and a half at least. It could actually be 3rd century document. So we just really don't know. And more than that, we don't even know what it says. It's true that there's a little discussion in line one about the mother of Jesus. And then there's a reference to a Mary who is worthy in the next line. But all the rest of the lines of the sentences are gone in this fragment. And then you get the famous line, Jesus said to them, my wife, and then it's illegible after that. So we have no idea what he says. It could actually be just a spiritual statement. My wife is anyone who truly loves me. A little bit like in Mark 3, where Jesus says, who is my mother, who is my brother, who are my sisters?
Those who do
the will of my father. Mm. It could just be a statement like that. So it may not even be a claim that it's Jesus' actual wife. And even if it were, and I give that a 50-50 chance that it is a reference to the wife of Jesus, but even if it were, it's a late second century text at the earliest. That means it has no relevance at all to the historical Jesus. This is not just me as a Christian saying this, because I rather like the idea of Jesus having a wife. But it's just, you can't turn to a text written 150 years after Jesus when we have a wealth of documents from within the century of Jesus.
Yeah, we'll come to the idea of Jesus having a wife later and if it makes any difference. But I suppose what's also been said in these reports is that what this fragment tells you is perhaps what some Christian communities of the 4th century period perhaps believed about Jesus, but it doesn't necessarily tell you anything about Jesus' life itself.
There are so many ifs here, right?
Yeah.
If it's authentic, if it actually is a reference to Jesus' wife rather than a reference to the true disciple, metaphorically the wife of Jesus, if it's actually the wife, then even still it only tells you what late second century Christians were saying about Jesus. It doesn't tell you about the historical Jesus because it's too late to provide fresh information when we have a ton of references to Jesus from the first century. It just can't trump them. That's a basic rule of history. You go with your earliest texts. And if there is a late text that is completely idiosyncratic, which this certainly is, it has almost no historical worth. And the interesting thing to note is Karen King herself, who's the one sort of promoting this little fragment, is adamant, certainly in her academic paper, but even quoted a couple of times in the media, adamant, this tells us nothing about the historical Jesus. It only tells us what late second century Christians might have been saying about Jesus having a wife.
But you can tell within this, media saturated culture, we're always in the mood for a very quick headline that just distills it down. And so people will say, oh, well, clearly Jesus had a wife, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's how it works. The headlines generally implied Jesus had a wife. The first couple of paragraphs talk about a new discovery set to create controversy through the church, and then people stop reading. They go, oh, yeah, that confirms everything I already knew.
Yeah. Again, we'll get to that later. But do you think, you just mentioned that, that this discovery is set to rock the foundations of the church. Do you think it's going to have, a far-reaching impact?
None at all. None at all. It only tells us a little more about the diversity of early Christianity, if it's authentic and if it's a reference to Jesus' wife. The problem is we're never going to be able to resolve this short of finding the rest of the document.
Now, does it actually make any difference whether Jesus was married or not? You say that you like the idea.
Yeah, I think to our Roman Catholic friends, it will make a dogmatic difference, a theological difference, because it is official teaching of the Roman Catholic Church that Jesus was single. The broader Christian community doesn't have that same problem. I mean, Anglicans or Baptists or whatever don't have any dogma that says he was single. We all assume he was single because there's no mention of a wife in the Gospels.
And is that the academic consensus as well?
I'd be speculating a bit, but I'd say something like 90% of the historical Jesus scholars that touch on the subject of Jesus' family say he was very probably single. And this is because the Gospel writers loved marriage, had a high, very Jewish view of marriage and sexual relations. Mention several of Jesus' own family, mum, dad, brothers, sisters.
And left out the wife.
Yeah. And in some cases, silence is deafening. Silence is revealing. So it's very unlikely that he was married. But you ask, does it make any theological difference? I don't think so. I think it would just be an underlining of his humanity. He shared this beautiful relationship that I share. I love the idea that he had a wife and had to go through the torture in his own heart at the thought of what was going to happen to him and therefore her because of his cross. But all of that's really fanciful because the evidence is well against that. It's more likely that, like the prophet Jeremiah in the Old Testament, who was who remained single as a sign to Israel of the barrenness of Israel. It's likely Jesus saw himself a bit like that. He chose singleness as a sign to Israel, a prophetic sign that Israel was estranged from its lover, God.
The Centre for Public Christianity, Beyond Religion.
Now, you mentioned a couple of times throughout our discussion the idea of the academic community of, you know, historical scholars. It's important to clarify that, you know, people who study Jesus in the academy, we're not just talking Christians like yourself, right, with an interest in history. We're talking about a huge spectrum of people with widely differing beliefs.
This is one of the things that's very often misunderstood. This is study of Jesus' life going on not in seminaries, but in major universities around the world. I mean, at my own university, Macquarie, in the ancient history department, they've got a whole course on the historical Jesus. And if you type into the catalogue Alexander the Great and Julius Caesar and then Jesus, you'll find there are more historical Jesus volumes than there are Julius Caesar and Alexander the Great combined. This is how big an academic field it is. And Macquarie is the biggest ancient history department in the country by a long shot. So it is a massive discipline. It's made up of Jews, Christians, agnostics, atheists, all following secular rules of inquiry. No one's allowed to point to a gospel text and say, aha, this is the word of God, so this must be true. That never happens in historical Jesus studies. We all have to use, whether we're Christians or not, have to use normal historical methods.
And it's not just looking at the gospel texts, right? There's also all this extra, like, non-biblical stuff out there as well.
Oh, absolutely. Some of it directly relating to Jesus. So a couple of references in Josephus, one in Tacitus, one in Marabas, Rapion, and so on. But the more significant stuff, really, is all the background material that we find, the Dead Sea Scrolls, some texts of the Pseudepigrapha, the writings of Josephus and what that tells us about Palestine in the Roman period, archaeology itself. All of this has to be studied before you look at the Gospels and say, does this story fit what we know of early first century Palestine under Roman rule? And the general consensus is it absolutely fits. In fact, some things only make sense. Some things in the Gospels only make sense when you put them against what we know of that very early period in the first century.
So it actually works to reinforce the claims in some ways.
It does. I mean, some people like to approach the Gospels trying to prove or disprove individual sayings of Jesus or prove and disprove individual acts of Jesus. But historical scholars are now in general agreement that while we still want to do that a little bit, the more responsible historical method is to find out all that you can about that land at that time and then read the whole Gospels, the whole account of Jesus, and see what fits and what emerges as having incredible resonance with that period. And this is why today there is more confidence about the general course of Jesus' life amongst secular scholars than there ever has been in the study of Jesus. And it's ironic because this coincides with the revival of the kind of nuttiness that says Jesus never lived, that you don't get amongst historical Jesus scholars. You do get amongst sort of the new atheists and so on.
Now, a couple of years ago, we've had Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code suggesting that, you know, Mary Magdalene was actually Jesus's wife. So this idea that Jesus was married isn't a new one. Now, even though that work was fiction, it was very popular and it seemed to confirm all these suspicions that the church is, you know, trying to cover up the truth. Now, what explains this persistent suspicion?
Well, the church is a massive institution and it's been around a long time, so it has a lot of skeletons in the closet. We just need to own up to that. And it hasn't lived up to its own principles of honesty and humility and grace and confession of its own sin. It's often hidden away its mistakes. But the way of Jesus, of course, is not to do that, to bring it out into the light. And so we've asked for this. The criticism isn't always fair because there is quite a lot of openness and humility in the church even still. Although the church has invited this criticism, I think the average skeptical person needs to analyse their own skepticism as really being a product of psychological factors as well as facts. And in this case, at least, the case of this so-called Gospel of Jesus' wife, the facts are completely against it having any relevance to the historical Jesus.
Yeah, and as you've said, any investigation into what the Academy says about the historical Jesus tends to cast doubt on this particular fragment. But thank you very much for having this discussion with us, John.
My pleasure. Thank you.